And welcome, yes, it's Rake the Moon Edition 7. Onwards we plough like good Wiltshire stock. It was subpar at Shrewsbury and everyone knew it, but Darren Oldacre got to be on the receiving end when he wasn't being go-taker. It all brings the fan-player-manager relationship cycle back into focus for us to unpack. Round the ragged rocks, the written reasons ran. We'll sift through the 11 pages of Portalgate on Ollie Clark and Luton while trying to keep our brains in the same dimension. And the Knights of the Round Table, some quick thoughts on the in-house sit-down with Chairman, Chief Executive and Manager, all on Rake the Moon this week. But of course, before we lay into weightier matters, it is time for the banter section. So, given the Darren Oldacre schmozzle that we are about to explore, Sam, can you remember the last time you booed something?
Ooh. Crikey, that's a good question. In my head or out loud? I regularly find myself booing things in my head, but out loud.
We'll go with out loud first, and then I might have to explore this inner part of your psyche before we carry on.
Okay, so the last time I would have booed something in my head would have been when I took my sons to the pantomime at Christmas time. Of course, that's a little bit less sort of severe than booing someone in a sporting context, but... The evil queen of Sleeping Beauty, whatever the evil queen is in that at the Wyvern at Christmas time.
She was playing up to type, was she?
It was someone from The Chase. I'm not a big sort of daytime quiz fan, but it was one of the lady quizzes from The Chase, and I don't know her name, but we booed her, and we enjoy booing her.
that's good. I think I have a habit of tending to sometimes internally, but maybe externally, boo a certain sign that indicates I'm switching from one county to another, because curious old habits die hard, I think.
This is what I mean by having a negative reaction in your head, but keeping it to yourself where possible. But are you saying that you're shouting in your car, actively shouting at it?
I'm not shouting. I think there can be a token boo if I'm of such mind. I mean, occasionally it brings some hilarity to the passenger if there is one, but it can happen.
I remember getting into a pattern in my early 20s of being very unhappy every time I passed the Majeski Stadium on the M4, and then I realised that Reading weren't really that significant. And that's sort of gone away again for quite a long time. But yes. I can empathise with your emotions there.
No, well, occasionally I found myself in the Costco next to the Majeski, so I've had to make my peace with it. And I think that's all right. A visit there next year would be nice, though, for a game of football. That would be well. Yeah, so let's start off at Shrewsbury at the weekend. Not a thing of great joy. 3-1 defeat. I think everyone acknowledged that it wasn't a great performance. Certainly the manager did. I'm sure the players would have done in an interview post-match if we'd spoken to them. But in particular, what we kind of heard a little bit of on Saturday got brought into sharper relief on Monday. It did sound like there was some sort of general booing and or... delight, if you understand, when Darren Oldacre was substituted, which was not seen as an unpopular move at the time, given he was struggling to have an impact on the game. It also sounds like, from what Ian Holloway said in his pre-Barnet news conference, that Oldacre did perhaps react to that a little bit and has certainly taken it to heart. So it all drags us into this space of the whole relationship between players, fans and manager, which does appear a kind of curious melting pot given Swindon's fairly elevated position in the table. So what did your gut tell you, I guess, Sam, when you saw the quite extensive comments we ended up having about Darren Oldacre and all that?
Yeah, I thought that Holloway spoke quite well about it on Monday. From what I can see on social media, from the day, there was sort of words exchanged between Oldacre and fans, and obviously the fans reacted to his substitution. And it does bring, as you say, into light this odd dynamic that exists currently, this sort of three-way dynamic that, when at its best, allows clubs to move forwards on the pitch much more easily. I think there are sometimes signs that there is more buy-in between fans and players and players and fans. And fans certainly have players in this current squad that they identify with, that they want to do well, that that are perhaps their favourites. But there is this curious relationship that still exists as a whole between the playing side and a large chunk of the fan base. And even though the club is challenging for promotion and the team has won a great many games this season, it doesn't quite have the feel of even some seasons where Swindon have struggled in the past and had players that have connected with fans and a manager that has connected with fans in a much more universal way. And it all sort of comes down to, I think, how fans are feeling about the club in general and how that translates into their expectations of how a player should be or how managers should be. But I think we have to be a little bit critical of ourselves as fans sometimes. And that's what Holloway, I think, was trying to talk about yesterday. And often he doesn't get across his point particularly well when he's talking about supporters and it pisses them off. And that obviously then has this negative effect where there's a chunk of fans who will always be waiting for Holloway to blame them for a particular result or have a go at them despite a particular result or despite them travelling really well or whatever it happens to be. And it's just really weird that the whole dynamic is odd, that fans are waiting for the manager to tell them off. The manager feels like he has to keep occasionally mentioning the bad things to remind them that actually on the pitch it's been pretty good this year. And the players in the middle, for the large part, have produced performances that have got them to the automatic promotion places in League Two as it stands, and yet are finding themselves not really appreciated yet in the way that maybe at other clubs they would or in other times at Swindon they would. And it's really weird. You would hope that this sort of scenario would bring out a sense of uniformity and union, but it doesn't at the moment. And I'm not quite sure what the solution is to that, because Holloway isn't going to change his spots at all. He doesn't have a filter and he's a very emotional man. So he's going to keep saying exactly what comes to the front of his head. Fans who don't like that will continue not to like that. And occasionally League Two players do play badly. So I don't know what the solution is, Andrew. I just think that it's a strange sort of dynamic in an industry where this is pretty much the only place where that dynamic exists in sports entertainment.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we may have to accept, whether we like it or not, is he will kind of protect his flock come what may, I think. So, you know, if the players are suffering in any way, I think he'll be on whoever's back is causing that suffering. Although he did acknowledge that Oldacre was wrong to have a go back, and unfortunately for players, that is life. If the fans are giving you grief, you have to suck it up, grin, and move on, even if you think it's unfair. I think that's part of the unwritten contract. So you know, I'm sure that's been discussed with Oldacre. Yes, quite how this breaks through. I guess in Holloway is something of a divisive figure in that, as you say, he's unfiltered. He will say what he thinks. Some people really appreciate that. Other people don't when they get on the wrong end of it. And all of us have copped flack in our different times at different stages to different degrees, which is absolutely fine. So I think there is some improvement in the sense that the fans actually like some of the players, which perhaps going back to the latter end of the Gunning era, I can't really remember any sort of particular fondness for the squad that was kind of being thrust out there and, you know, bouncing around the lower quadrants of League Two. I guess that's the crunch question, isn't it? How you kind of rebuild this. They've tried discount ticket prices, although we can all talk about the marketing or lack thereof. It is quite hard, isn't it, off the top of my head, to immediately come up with obvious solutions to perhaps bind everyone together. Because Richie Wellens could get away with having a go at fans after that game at Stevenage. I remember that. Perhaps the fact that he was a bit more targeted, maybe, and a bit less frequent in his criticism probably helped. So I was saying maybe we could get the manager to tone it down a bit, but that may be the most stupid thing I've said in about seven editions of Rake the Moon. So where it goes, I think I'm almost wondering if fans should contact us at this point, because I'm scratching my head a bit as you are.
I see this chunk of the fans who constantly are waiting for him to have a go at them. And that's kind of on Holloway, because he's created this perception that all he wants to do is criticise his own fans. And I don't think that that's true. It's just the way that it's coming out quite a lot. And I don't know about you, Andrew, but when you can sense him moving on to that subject in a presser, my heart starts to sink, because I know that this interminable cycle is going to begin again, where we have an obligation to report what's said, but what is then reported influences supporters to be miserable, which influences the manager to react badly. And the whole godforsaken cycle just keeps going round and round and round and round. But at the same time, you can't expect supporters just to not be affected by what their manager is saying. And if they want their manager to rally them, this is him trying to rally them. It's just not working for a chunk of them. And so he's left with results and performances to do that talking. And therefore, when the results are consistently good and the performances are okay to good, then this stuff doesn't come up. But the moment that there's a performance as limp and insipid as the one on Saturday, and there's an issue with a fan, with some fans giving some verbals to a player and a player giving it back, then it just brings itself up, and it reminds us that it just feels so fragile. The whole ecosystem at Swindon feels so fragile. Like, there's a lot of good that's taking place. They're in the promotion places. They're challenging to get back out of this league for the first time in 5 years. And yet there's just this constant underlying feeling that it's only one bad day from collapse. And as much good as they can do on and off the pitch, it just feels this way constantly, like the castle is built on sand. And how do they change that? Well, they have to uniformly change the way in which a large group of supporters feel about the top level of the club. I think this all filters down from the top, and those perceptions are ingrained to such an extent that I don't think a considerable number is going to change. I think that there's probably around 10-15% of previous regular match goers who don't go anymore because they object to the current ownership, and that just filters down. They don't want to spend money with them. I'm still going, I'm still spending money, obviously. But I did that in the previous ownership under Lee Powers. I stopped. I didn't want to give him any money. So I didn't go, so I can empathize with their sentiment. But I think it all trickles down from there, is that if you have skepticism, if you don't have trust, if you don't have belief at the top, then that can start to trickle down and inform your perception of people who are doing completely different jobs in different parts of the business. And I think that that is impacting on the club. And it's not uniformly the club's fault, because the fans could, if they really wanted to, try and see past that for some sort of utilitarian on-pitch good. But I don't think you can expect a consumer to make that sort of decision. They're going to go with how they feel. Sometimes I feel as though the club absolves itself of responsibility for the way that supporters feel, even if that feeling is occasionally irrational. And the way to change that is by winning hearts and minds. I don't think that the ownership with their current setup is capable of doing that. They could bring people in to help do that, strategic communications, etc. But I think that there is this chunk of the fan base that will always be skeptical about whatever just about anybody to do with the club does now. And that will have this negative bearing. And I think that's why we don't see gates going up, though obviously cost of living will impact on that as well. But it's this cycle, Andrew, it just keeps on going round and round. And wouldn't it just be great if we could all between us find ourselves a way to appreciate good football results and try and find a way forwards together, just at least for the next 14 games, just to get out of League Two, just get out of this division, and then we can all fall out with each other again afterwards.
Yes, no, we feel like helpless hamsters in a wheel. I guess a few less pints of lager might help, but I do agree with you that there is some clear erosion in the home crowd in contrast to the away crowd, because I do think, without wishing to curry cheap favour here, to take four figures to Shrewsbury on a Saturday where usually it's about 500, and then to in all probability do the same at Barnet, given the run of away games, especially given the run of away midweek games, I think that kind of energy to go and support the team away from home is kind of impressive, and yet even that didn't quite kind of translate itself on Saturday. I know it doesn't help kind of falling behind early, but I do think you're right that there is some kind of corrosion from the distrust of the ownership by certain sections of the population. And I don't mean that corrosion is something they've kind of deliberately caused. I think it's just a sort of natural wearing down until the leadership, as you say, can find a way to restore a bit of trust and belief in their long-term planning. And I suppose the other thing before we move on is that the manager has publicly very clearly aligned himself with that regime as well, and because in the football sense they have done what he's asked.
Yeah, and I can understand why he wants why he believes in them, because he has been given the freedom to build what he needs to build and the cash to build what he wants to build, and that hands-off approach is not necessarily something that he's experienced with some of his previous clubs, and he's had some interesting chairmen at previous clubs if you look back at his CV too. So I can understand why he feels the way he does, and it is authentic the way he feels. He's not doing it because they're his bosses and he needs to do a public show of face for them. I think this comes from a place of authentic appreciation of what's being done for him behind the scenes. But again, that group of people in the fan base who don't appreciate the ownership will then attach that against him and label him as sort of brown nosing and not seeing the realities of some of their disappointment with what's going on off the field, and that can then lead to some additional sort of bad negative reception for manager and players. But you would hope that in time, if he keeps on winning, the positivity will be there. I think there have been a couple of occasions at the County Ground this year where it's felt a bit of a buzz. Like that Bolton game was as much of a rush as I've remembered at the County Ground in the last few years, certainly in the last three seasons. Just the sort of volume and unity and purpose behind the whole thing felt different. It's obviously a struggle both for players to replicate that, because we've not really seen a performance like it since, but we've also not really seen a performance from the home fans like we did that day either. And there is, I feel, something of a shackle on the fan base, particularly at home, that is still waiting for things to go wrong rather than celebrating the things that go right. And I don't know what the answer is to changing that. That we could talk about the match day experience away from the football and how you try and make a fan base feel more part of a family when they are at a game, and treat them with a little bit more hospitality and give them more things to do at a stadium and allow them to visit a stadium in more comfort and so on and so forth. But that only goes so far, that there is still a fracture between a chunk of the fan base and the club, despite them still loving their club. And I think this filters down into what we see on the pitch sometimes with relationships with players. And Holloway's absolutely right that it doesn't do anyone any good. I mean, it might release a little bit of frustration from a fan to have a go at his own player, but it doesn't really do anyone any good because that player will be on the floor and Holloway will have to pick him up, and Oldacre is not the first one this season that has been struggling at some point with the response from the crowd. Though I'm not going to, you know, talk about the names of others who have had similar experiences. That does not benefit the team in the short, medium or long term. Having a go at your own player during a game does not benefit the team, but I understand why it happens. I think it happens quicker than in a lot of other places at Swindon, and I think that's because of how everything feels just so fragile, and I don't know the way to fix it. Which is absolutely useless, really, because I'm talking about a problem and not proposing any solution whatsoever.
No, I could probably talk for another 10 or 15 minutes about this. I might say one point. I do wonder whether some people actually do consider that quick kind of vent at someone actually might do them some good. It's like, come on, sharpen up. Because I think there's a certain percentage of people that are kind of very sort of old school and love the fact that Sir Alex Ferguson brought out the hairdryer. So that's just a parting thought.
Maybe they do. We can tell them categorically that it doesn't help. It's a strange relationship because you're a performer that someone's paying to watch. So you're expecting them to perform well. But there aren't many other industries where you would cop abuse while doing the job like that in that sort of way. And I guess anyone who's sort of worked in retail or in hospitality, you know, behind a bar or in a shop, will have come across aggressive customers in the past. And, you know, we have signs up all over our railways saying that abuse of staff won't be tolerated. And yet in the sporting entertainment industry, it seems to be tolerated. And it seems that we go to games with a semi-entitlement to do it as well, if what's in front of us is not to our satisfaction. And again, I understand why that emotion comes out and where it originates from, but we wouldn't tolerate it in a large number of parts of society, and yet we do in this particular instance. And then when a player cops it, he's not allowed to give it back. I think it sets some pretty dreadful double standards. If you're going to give it to a player, let him give it back because you've earned it. These guys, it's not like these guys are not trying. I think that Holloway made a really good point in his presser on Monday when he said that it looks like Oldacre doesn't try because his style is quite floaty. It's not hard nut. You're not going to go and smash into a tackle as Darren Oldacre, but you sure as hell, when he's on fire, might be able to waltz past three players and stick it in the top corner. But if you've battered his confidence so much by abusing him because he's had a bad day at work, then he's going to be less and less likely to produce the magic that you want to see because that makes you feel good. So I don't personally understand giving players individual grief. Sure, boo a collective team performance at the end of a game, be negative in the reflections of an overall display. But in that moment, when you're isolating your vitriol against an individual when they are already in a ditch, that's not going to do anybody to do with your club any good.
And yes, I think we'll leave it there. But this is probably something where we really would welcome listener feedback even more than average. So Sam, give them the email address.
Yeah, you can get in touch at editor@themoonraker.news, or you can send a message to us on social media platforms, on my social media, DM me, however you get in touch usually. We'd love to hear from you. I think very soon we will be doing a special Q&A episode with the various questions that we've had come in over the last fortnight or so. So if you want to get in touch and have your question answered, or if you want me to go and find out the answer to a specific question, as we've had a couple already, then just let me know and we'll try and get to yours very soon.
So to phase two, again, we're going to take out our scholarly and legal brains and look through 11 pages of why Ollie Clark was suspended again and why he shouldn't have been seen at Luton. The FA released their written reasons to explain why he was definitely suspended, despite what other people may have thought or other boxes that may have been ticked by FA employees. So I think the very concise summary of this, Sam, on Ollie Clark playing at Luton is, from these written reasons, is that Swindon never appeared to have thought he was suspended. The portal certainly didn't show he was suspended because someone at the FA did not tick the appropriate box to include EFL trophy games. But the association kind of concluded that that was more Swindon's problem than their problem. Is that fair?
Oh, it does seem to be what the case was, yeah. It's basically admin error versus admin error and whose was worse.
That sounds like the worst kind of fighting video game you can possibly imagine.
Well, in the era of AI slop, I'm sure someone will eventually produce something like that.
Yeah. Again, that's one for our social media.
That no one came out of this well at all. I think everyone looks like they are slightly incompetent going out of this. Who did anything right in this situation? The club didn't double check, even though the wording of the ban stated that it had to be across such a time as Swindon playing seven games. And that was the four games were down at that point. And then the FA failed to check a box that made sure that the portal was accurately displaying the information, even though it was accurately displaying Finlay Munro was banned for that game for accumulation of yellow cards in the competition. Everyone is at fault here. Swindon are the ones who ultimately have been punished through the EFL's decision, which followed on from this decision. And Ollie Clark has been punished because he's had to set out another game, which now actually feels like he might have set out a 9-game suspension, effectively. I'm a bit confused by the Category 1 and whether or not, if he had originally served that game at Luton, he would have then had to have also sat out later in that run. But the club don't come out well. The FA don't come out well. It's all a mess. And while Swindon have been punished, and rightfully been punished in the circumstances, the FA have not made any commitment to any sort of improvements or oversight procedure or changes to their system to ensure that this does not happen again. And I think that that's an abdication of duty on their part too. And unfortunately, it kind of sums up the whole sorry shit show.
Yeah, no, I think the FA do score fairly high marks, don't they, for opacity when it comes to taking responsibility for things, and certainly in terms of how they deal with refereeing errors, bar these odd, very high-profile ones you get that people are actively looking for. So whichever penalty it was it Aston Villa, Newcastle, or something like that? Mm. I think people have noticed that the referee in that has not got a game this weekend. And I think that does happen from time to time, but you have to really go out and hunt for it through your own kind of microscope, as it were, to look through. If you really want to spend your time looking through the refereeing appointments and matching them up to errors, then one, good luck to you, and two, you can do that yourself. But it is kind of an indication that, yep, Swindon have got a fairly sort of public beating here, and hopefully whoever made the genuine mistake of not ticking the box on the portal has received some help. I mean, it sounds like Swindon are going to give Secretary Alicia Henry some help, because one of the new hires looks likely to be someone to kind of assist her in the whole sort of football administration department, and presumably they will be able to recite an FA handbook pretty much by rote. So if you go chapter 17, paragraph 3 at them, they'll tell you what it's about.
Yeah, I think part of it is that, and part of it is coming in to do a lot of the work that Mandy Coe was doing on the women's side, now that she's retired, presumably fully retired now. It is good that there will be additional support. And as much as I know Anthony Hall rejected the notion that there wasn't enough rules and regs experience in the building in that roundtable interview that the club published on Monday night, they did 18 months prior have three people with extensive rules and regs knowledge. And I'm not talking about football knowledge. I'm not talking about the ability to identify a player. I'm not talking about how to coach a player, how to set up a team against another side. I'm talking about in-depth knowledge of the handbook, the stinking handbook. If you don't have knowledge of the stinking handbook, then there's going to be a stronger likelihood that you're going to make errors. And Swindon did not have as much knowledge in the building of the handbook as they had done the previous year. And to allow for these mistakes not to be made, it is useful to have more than one person who has a grounding in the very, very many and varied rules across EFL and FA and National League. And there was a gap in the support network for the club secretary here to be able to bounce an idea off someone else who has an understanding of the situation, who might have been able to say, well, hang on, shall we just contact the FA just to check? I know the portal doesn't say it, but his ban does say this, and these two sources are therefore contradictory, so we need a third source. Let's go and get an answer. But there was no one else in the building who had the grounding, the background, to be able to put a foot in and say, stop, wait, let's just think about this more clearly. They're having someone come in now. They're having an assistant club secretary that will allow for a little bit of collaborative work in this area. That will be helpful for the club. That's positive. But I still fundamentally disagree with the chief executive here that there was a fine amount of rules and regs knowledge in the building, because you did have three when Jamie Russell, Jamie White and Bailey Coupland were around. Then there was two. Then Jamie and Bailey left and Alicia came in. And then everything was put on her shoulders from a regs perspective. And I just don't think that was fair. But they are rectifying it. Whether or not they will say that is actively rectifying an issue, I don't know. But at least from where I'm sitting, I can see that there's going to be more support. And that's a good thing. It's all just a mess, isn't it? And we should move on a bit, but it's important to go through exactly what happened and find where the mistakes were and address them so they don't happen again. And I'm just not, I don't know for sure that either on the FA or the club side that is going to happen. I'm certainly not sure on the FA side, because they've shown absolutely no proactivity whatsoever in addressing the issues that led to their portal being wrong. I mean, at least the club are making an active recruitment so to bring in someone with regs knowledge. It feels like there is a strong potential for something like this to happen again at some point in the future, or one side or the other, which seems a bit silly given how much it's interrupted the season, and how, you know, they've had to go and fight it legally, and it's cost money and time and effort and energy and emotion. You've got to learn something from the experience. All parties have got to learn something from the experience. I'm just not sure that they are.
Yeah, and I think the last point I'll make on this, because we are running up against time, is it felt like Ian Holloway had to drive the whole team sheet issue, which isn't part of the FA's written rules, by having conversations with Howard Webb, one of which we could partially hear before a press conference, put various backup systems in place there to make sure there's no more team sheet chaos. So, again, it's perhaps the FA or the PGMOL are being more kind of reactive than proactive. And here we shall end that before we find ourselves drowning in documentation once again. Finally, the club has now released its somewhat inelegantly entitled supporter engagement video, I think, for want of a better phrase, with the chairman Clem Mulfooney, chief executive Anthony Hall, manager Ian Holloway, and the questions being put forward by Callum Knowles, who is the club media man. So we've kind of sat down and had an initial watch. I suspect you have some far away. What are the sort of first things that spring to mind?
Oh, I think the first thing is I wanted to credit Callum with the concept. I think that it's a good concept in principle, in getting them around the table and trying to make more of a conversation about it. I wouldn't have used it to fill a fan forum slot effectively. I mean, there's no obligation for them to have held a fan forum slot because as far as the EFL supporter engagement regulations are concerned, the AB does the job. You don't need to have forums on top of that. It's just that they've committed to two this year within their fan engagement plan. So I'm not sure I would have filled it with it, but as a piece of standalone club communication, if it wasn't in place of a fan forum, I think that it is a very admirable attempt to do something that looks a little bit different and has a bit of a different flavour to it. And Callum was putting questions to the three of them there, which were not all softball. I mean, they might have been completely avoided at times or batted back with a straight bat, but he was still asking some pretty forthright questions, which have been put to him by readers. And I was delighted that it seems that some that I'd put on an article last week managed to find its way into there as well. So credit to him for trying something different. I just wouldn't have tried to sell it as the equivalent of a fan forum because evidently it's not. It's a completely different sort of format. I don't think we learnt a great deal new from it. There are some sections within it that sort of took stories further forwards. There are some parts that will help inform how we report on other elements like the redevelopment. But largely it was what we expected. It kind of supported a lot of our reporting. The chairman was confirming the amount that he's underwriting, albeit in loans, each month to the tune of around 200 grand. The chief exec was saying that the club will still show a loss in its next accounts, although revenue will have gone up, saying the commercial has gone up 22%, I think it is, in a year. There are bits around how the club is run which will help inform us in small areas, but overall there wasn't much that was new about it. And there's always a slight danger when you have the manager in a setting like this that he will dominate, because that's him. He is built to dominate rooms. He's built to own these sorts of situations. And I think that you struggle to get the most out of the questions that are aimed at other people on the panel. And again, that's no fault either of the manager or of the person posing the questions, but it would be interesting in the future to have a purely sort of off-field conversation around these sorts of scenarios and maybe add a couple of departmental heads from the back office to go into some more granular detail. But it's a private business, Andrew. You know, they're not obliged to give us anything. And this is where we often forget as football fans that, you know, it's not like we own the company. I don't think there's much, if any, private shareholding aside from the primary shareholders now. I think that all got bought back or diluted down to nothing at one point or another. And so they can do what they want with their business, and we have no right to know any of that intricacy. But yeah, I think it was an admirable piece of communication, just billed in the wrong way to satisfy, you know, what people would expect from a fan forum.
Yeah, no, I think I will echo some of the praise for Callum there. Not that I need to, because I see him, but I think it was good that the question of the whole ongoing Australian court action that he's facing, you know, was put in there directly, even though it was kind of battered off. I think it was good to know, again, that there's still no real consideration of the sort of investment in the club being done in that equity terms, which, you know, helps you a bit, I think, with the financial rules, unless I'm mistaken, and it's going to remain in that sort of loan form. So I think some of the more thorny questions were, you know, kind of put out there, and you can make what you want and have your own level of satisfaction with the responses, but at least they were asked. I suppose the whole thing that perhaps strikes me on a broader point about the kind of regime as a whole is they kind of talk about the sort of plan and the vision, but I didn't think articulating exactly what the plan and the kind of vision is in great detail has ever really been a strength. I for me at the moment, it feels like the main vision is we do lots of good stuff on the football pitch, and that hopefully lifts up everything else. And, you know, obviously there are plans for redevelopment, but how it all kind of comes together and how there's a sort of clear-eyed focus on how everything grows, I still don't really have that feeling after watching that.
And this is where they've struggled with communication. And they hate it when people criticise them for it, because they do a reasonable volume of communication from a club perspective, from a corporate perspective. There's not a lot of public-facing communication from chief executive and chairman, but in general, Callum is doing a fair amount of output. But it's not output alone that that is going to deliver you results when you're looking to win over people. Random tangent, but what we're trying to build with Counterpress, which is the platform that Moonraker sits on, is all about value over volume. It's about creating something that gives its audience a reason to visit, and you're not just publishing for publishing's sake, which is a real problem within print media at the moment. And I think to an extent that principle also applies to a football club, is that you need to communicate at a level that people can consider it being valuable. And if you're pumping out slop as communication, or if you're not really telling a story when you do communicate, then that's not good communication, even if you are still communicating. And I think that sometimes that gets forgotten within the higher levels of the club, because it's not their field, you know, that they have been working in, you know, maintenance and construction services for their entire lives, and this is an alien industry to them, even if they've been now involved in it either as owner or a CEO for between, you know, 2.5 and 5 years, and they're still not quite adapted themselves to the customer facing role that that football and sport entertainment in general requires. And I don't think they're learning those lessons, because they are very set in their ways. They're very sure of their convictions. For Clem, it's very much, if the team does well, if they get promoted, the attendances will go up, the revenue will go up, the business will be able to look further forwards. But what they've managed to neglect in that is that you have customers that actually generate that revenue. And if you're doing well on the pitch, but you're also pissing customers off at the same time, or you're not addressing the concerns that those customers have, then your upwards incline is not going to be as steep as it would be if you were bringing them along for the journey. And they've failed to bring a chunk of people along for the journey, and therefore they're not achieving the results that they would hope from an attendance perspective this season, even though Holloway is having a fantastic season on the pitch. And that makes them annoyed, because they feel that it's vindictive on the part of the supporters, I think, that people are staying away because they don't like them. And I think that maybe there is a point in that. And I don't know, again, it's another one of these cycles. I don't know where it ends. Someone's got to swallow their pride. Either the supporters have got to go, well, I need to go back, otherwise we're not going to get the revenue in, and therefore we're not going to be able to make the money to climb up the leagues, or the club are going to have to realise that there are areas in their fan experience and their fan engagement which still are causing a wedge to be lodged between them and the 1,000, 2,000 fans that they want to come back, and take steps to address that. And at the moment, we're kind of in this middle ground. It's almost like some sort of Mexican standoffs taking place while everyone figures out what they're going to do. And that's not good for the club as well. We're talking a lot about sort of cycles of things and standoffs and fragility. And it's so frustrating, isn't it? And I feel like I'm being unnecessarily negative, but I think that it's important to portray how things feel, that there is this general just almost there, but we can't seem to do it together kind of feel around the football club. And something's got to shift if this thing is going to move forward fast under this ownership, and if it's going to move forwards in unison. Something's got to change, because I just don't see them just winning games, and Holloway producing on the pitch doesn't feel like it's going to do it. And I think that's what the model is currently built on. So somewhere, maybe there's a bit of a compromise. Maybe it's over redevelopment. Maybe the fans have got to approve that so that there can be additional revenue streams coming in, so that the chairman is not having to find the money to underwrite operating costs to the tune of £2.5 million a year. So there's not having to put more debt onto the club so that the future of the business looks a little bit more rosy and the business is worth more than the sum of its debt, which obviously is the situation at the moment. Maybe it's the club have got to recognise that they need to do a little bit more upfront work in accommodating supporter demands and needs, and whatever it happens to be, there's got to be a little bit of give somewhere to make this progress possible, because it does feel as though right now, even if Holloway is doing fantastically, that this impasse is going to continue for a reasonable period of time.
And on that note, we will say exactly the same things on Rake the Moon Edition Episode 8. No, we won't. We won't. We will try and say some different things. But I suspect the same tendrils and shoots may be what we're grabbing at in the Swindon Town Garden, which is a metaphor I've not worked on clearly enough. But a reminder, if you want more of Sam's in-depth reporting, features and all the rest of it, you can subscribe to the Moonraker at a very reasonable price per month to get all that, as well as enjoy the benefits, unquote, of this podcast. Thank you, Sam, as always.